Well, it can be said that Wendy Perrin has done as much for the world of dance by writing about it as she has through her decades-long career as a performer, choreographer, and teacher. Editor and critic Elizabeth Zimmer said this of Perrin's writing: "The average choreographer doesn't have nearly her facility with language, and the average journalist lacks the inside understanding of the process. Perrin combines these two perspectives masterfully." Wendy served as editor-in-chief of Dance Magazine for 9 years and is now its editor-at-large. She's in town to present a Cockafair Chair lecture, and it's my pleasure to welcome her here to Up to Date. And Wendy, welcome. So good to have you here.
It's great to be here, Steve.
Well, you've been writing about dance since the 1970s when you were with the Tricia Brown Company in New York. What was it about writing that attracted you, and what did it offer you that maybe dance didn't?
Well, writing was so hard. And it's very hard.
Yeah.
It's especially hard to write about dancing. A friend of mine told me that in China, they teach writers by telling them to describe the clouds.
Wow.
And I feel like describing dance is similar. It's always changing. It's never concrete. It leaves as soon as it gets there. And so the challenge is to write about dance with words that don't kill it.
Huh. Words, that means what exactly?
It means not pinning something down to a single meaning. Hmm. It means describing it in a way that readers can envision it, but without being told what to think about it.
Well, if it's so hard to do it and to do it well, why did you take it on?
I think I took it on because I love talking about dance, and I would be talking about dance. I'd be talking about dance so much that my friends would say, "Shut up already." And so writing was an overflow of my interest in dance. There's another reason too, which is that looking back on the pieces that I've choreographed, they're not there anymore, and video falls apart, and it's not a stable form, and video doesn't actually get it anyway. So all the pieces I choreographed over 30 years are pretty much gone. But writing in print, in black and white, is something you can save.
Yeah.
And you can save it in a way that replicates it the way that it was. So
yeah,
that's partly what it gives me.
You know, I have such respect for folks like yourself who do what you do. You may not know it. I've been a journalist for 35 years.
I have heard that.
And I cover politics, and I cover what people say and their actions and concrete things that sort of happen from a podium. And sometimes I'm sitting in a live performance of one kind or another, and if my mind wanders, I'll sit there and I'll think, now, if I had to write a story about what I'm seeing or hearing, how would I do it? And invariably, I'm lost. And after all these decades of doing what I'm doing, that says something fairly profound, I think. I don't know how you do it.
Well, yeah, I don't know either. I feel lost sometimes, too. And there are times where I have to look back at my notes, and they're scribbled, and they're notes over notes. And I feel more lost than ever, and then I don't have that much to write about the thing. But if I really have an assignment and I have to write about it, I'll really try to take good notes. Sometimes it's just six people running from left to right,
mm-hmm.
but it might be enough to give me a hint. But sometimes if I wait a while and it lingers with me, I can better describe what I felt while I saw it.
How important is it for you to describe certain moments that stand out to you in any one performance and give your reader a sense of what that moment was, as fleeting as it was?
Yeah, sometimes if you say like three moments, it'll be like three dots that the readers can connect.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment that you describe should be detailed enough so that people can picture it, but also indicate something about the ballet as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday afternoon, seeing the matinee at Kansas City Ballet, there was a moment in a piece called Diving into the Lilacs where one woman dove into the arms of a man, and it just immediately, the words, oh, the title says diving, and there's diving. Now, that wasn't the most important moment in the piece, and maybe I wouldn't have mentioned that in a review, but it stood out because of the word, because the word diving clicked into place.
Yes.
And that was a piece by Yuri Posikov at Kansas City Ballet. It was pretty great.
You were trained as a dancer. Were you also educated as a writer?
Let's see. I did take a workshop from two of the best dance critics, Deborah Jowett and Marcia Siegel. And they are both still writing. This was about 30 years ago, maybe more. And I wanted to learn from them. And I learned to be more specific with my verbs. I would use the verb do a lot. And one of them crossed out do and said, choose a more colorful verb. So I had to really... And even now, when I finish writing something, I look back at it and I go, are the verbs colorful enough? Especially for dance, you know.
That's key, I imagine. Yeah.
Absolutely. Diving, stumbling, floating, skittering. You want to use verbs like that instead of they just went from one side to the other.
Yeah, yes, I get that. Wendy Perrin's lecture, Enlivening Dance on Stage, What's Edgy Now, is part of the Cockafair Chair Series taking place tomorrow at Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. It begins at 6 in the evening. It's free, but a reservation is requested. You can do that through the Central Ticket Office. Again, that event tomorrow evening at 6. It's free. Enlivening Dance on Stage, What's Edgy Now?
Oh, I don't know about that title. We came up with edgy, and people have been saying on Facebook, what do you mean by edgy? So I have a few different meanings of the word edgy. Part of it is what puts you on the edge of your seat.
Okay.
That's part of what I think.
A different kind of edgy.
Yeah, a different kind of edgy. And I've chosen choreographers that make me sit on the edge of my seat. To show. So this lecture is going to have video of these really interesting choreographers.
And after this many years watching this, you still have choreographers who can do that for you. You're on the edge of your seat and thinking, what's going to happen here today?
Absolutely. Yeah, what's going to happen? Like, this choreographer is doing something really strange or really inventive, and what is going to happen next? I mean, and you can think that even though it's not narrative. It's not, you know, is he going to leave her? Is he going to kill his mother? It's not narrative like that. But it's, okay, you have six dancers doing the same thing and one dancer doing something different and two dancers off to the side. How are they going to relate to each other?
That's interesting. Compare the two processes for us, you know, creating and performing a dance piece to creating and executing a written piece. Are they very different for you now?
They're very different because creating a dance is very physical. It comes out of your own body, how you move, how you feel about how you move, how you explore your own body the way a painter explores color. You have your arm that can go this way or that way, and you're exploring that. But what's similar, and whereas with writing you're exploring words and phrases, what's similar is the downtime. In other words, when I'm choreographing, I have to back off and let it sit and simmer what I've done. Same thing with writing. I have to back off so I can come back to it and so that I can go, oh, this is what I've done.
Mm-hmm. We just talked with Richard Russo about backing away and then coming back to a piece of writing and the power of that for so many people. Your 2013 book, Through the Eyes of a Dancer, is a compilation of your writings, embracing everything from opinion pieces to reviews to blog posts. What was it like for you going through decades of writings? Was it an enjoyable trip down memory lane or something else?
It was enjoyable. I mean, I look back at the pieces I wrote in the 70s and I...
Were you wincing or were you okay with them?
Well, the ones I winced at, I deleted. They are not in the book.
Yeah, good call. Yeah.
And I had opinions of other friends of mine, my husband and other friends, you know, looking at things and wincing for me sometimes when I was too attached to a certain piece. But sometimes I would look at them and say, yes, I still agree with this. I know how I felt then. And other times, like for instance, Pina Bausch, who is one of the most well-known international choreographers, who sadly died in 2009. When I first saw her work in 1983 in Switzerland, I was very ambivalent about it. It was like, ooh, the combat she had between the men and the women and the obsessiveness of it just sort of turned me off. At the same time, I admired what she was doing. Well, maybe a decade later, I really enjoyed her work. Her work changed. It brought in more sensuality and more harmony, and I loved her work. So one of the great things about looking back that far at my own writing is seeing where I changed my mind, seeing how I perceived something differently. And that's a great thing.
Do you ever get frustrated with yourself that you didn't see something differently the first time?
Yeah. I guess that I didn't see something in it that maybe might have enlarged it for me, or that I see a phrase of writing where, even though I've edited it, I've edited that paragraph six times, it still could be better.
Yeah, yeah. You once initiated a course in dance journalism at the Dance Theater Workshop. Why did you encourage other dancers to write? What were you thinking?
I guess I was frustrated with the critics, people who are excellent writers and have seen lots and lots of dance. And I was a critic myself, so at certain times in my life, I felt like I sided more with being a critic, and other times I sided more with being a performer and choreographer. But I felt Deborah Jowett, who's someone that I admire a lot, she was a dancer. I've actually danced in some of her choreography. And she writes from a dancer's perspective, although also from a critic's perspective. She's just such a fine writer. And I wanted dancers to feel that if they could write, that they could be a critic. And there's a tradition in literature and in film to some extent of people who make the work who also become critics, like John Updike. He's a writer of fiction, but he was also a critic. I think Truffaut in film was a critic first, I think, and then became a filmmaker. But in dance, people get the idea that dancers only work with their body, that they only have body intelligence, and that they never have verbal language intelligence. And yes, sometimes that's true, that body intelligence is enough to make a fine dancer. But there are dancers who also are amazing writers. And when I was editing a dance magazine, it was one of my joys to discover a dancer or choreographer who was an incredible writer. Who knew?
Yeah.
And that's just fantastic. So I would really encourage those people.
Well, what do you think the major challenges for dance are today, whether it's classical or modern?
Oh, gosh. One of the major challenges is to let the audience know that they don't have to know anything, that they can just come in
and experience it.
And experience it in their own way, in their own body, their own sense of kinetics, their own sense of visual interaction. And they don't have to feel, oh, I missed something. Because everybody sees it differently. There are things that I miss that someone else gets and things that they get that I might see. So I think that's a challenge.
Do you think we've elevated too many art forms to places that are out of reach for too many people? I'm thinking jazz, classical, you know, you're talking dance here today, obviously. Wine tasting. We have a sommelier who comes in here with some regularity who just brings it down to such a gloriously understandable level, and you realize very quickly, why is it something else altogether sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all can walk, or most of us can walk, and dancing comes right out of walking, just like singing comes out of talking.
Yeah.
And to me, it should be understandable to everyone, but so many people have sort of a block against it. And one of the things is that in public schools, we teach music, but we don't often teach dance. So it's not something that people grow up with, unless they go to parties, and that's fine. But I think for me, it's really one step from enjoying music and dancing at parties to seeing dance on stage that's done on a more a more trained level.
Mm-hmm. What do you think these shows have done, like Dancing with the Stars or So You Think You Can Dance, in terms of bringing more aspiring dancers into the field or more people through the doors at performances?
I feel very mixed about some of those shows. Dancing, So You Think You Can Dance is the one that I've seen most. And what I love is that they let the viewing audience know how hard the dancers work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is really a big thing. And when they have to learn a routine really quickly, it's really hard. And they go into the stories of some of the people and how long they've been dancing. What I don't like is that it kind of pushes it in a direction that's hyper-sexualized and hyper-commercialized. So the guys have to have swagger and be macho, and the girls have to be sexy and stick out their private parts or lift their legs up really high. So there's a certain patina of commercialism on those shows. But more and more, dancers are very versatile, and some of the dancers who go on those shows also eventually dance with a contemporary dance company or another kind of company. So there is some crossover. Whether or not those shows have brought more people to dance studios to take classes or brought more people to become dance audiences, I do not know.
Writer, critic, and choreographer Wendy Perrin is my guest. You know, back in the 1970s, you co-authored an article about discrimination against women in dance. You revisited that article four decades later. How have your views changed on that topic?
Well, unfortunately, it's a lot the same. I think that there are so few men who study dance while they're young, and there's lots of social reasons for that. So the women tend to be more trained, and when they go to auditions, the women have more training and more experience. But many companies are looking for men to fill slots because there are so few of them. So women do tend to get discriminated against in that way. It's harder for a woman to find a job as a dancer or choreographer. But I think there are women choreographers who are doing very well, and I'm showing a lot of them tomorrow. Crystal Pite is one. Jawale Willow Jo Zolar is one. And yesterday, in the last program of Kansas City Ballet, they had Helen Pickett, who's an up-and-coming choreographer, a wonderful piece by her. So there are more women choreographers who are really trying things out now.
When it comes to a dancer's body image, are women held to a tougher standard than men?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's true with skin color, too. I think that, and this was true of the Harlem Renaissance in the 20s also, the dancers who danced at the Cotton Club or these different jazz clubs in the Harlem Renaissance, the women were not allowed to be dark. They were not hired if they had dark skin, whereas the men could have darker skin. Mm-hmm. And the women's chorus lines, mainly they tended to be light skin. But also I think in terms of thinness, audiences are more willing to look at a guy who's muscular and has maybe a wrestler's body rather than a dancer's body. But all dancers, especially in ballet, are encouraged to lengthen their muscles as opposed to knotting up their muscles, really lengthen.
Well, Wendy Perrin, again, her lecture, Enlivening Dance on Stage, What's Edgy Now? However you want to define edgy, is part of the Cock Affair Chair Series taking place tomorrow evening at Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. It begins at 6. It's free. You need a reservation, though. You can do that through the Central Ticket Office. And Wendy, what a pleasure to have you here. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, too. Thank you very
much. Good luck
Steve.
Tomorrow evening, okay?
Thank you.